The Republican National Convention taking place in Charlotte, North Carolina is unconventional for a number of reasons this year, but that isn't stopping the party from pushing its number one agenda item, which is, of course, to re-elect President Trump. Here is First Lady Melania Trump making the case for that from the Rose Garden last night and responding to some of the remarks made at last week's Democratic National Convention.
I don't want to use this precious time attacking the other side, because as we saw last week, that kind of talk only serves to divide the country further. I'm here because we need my husband to be our president and commander-in-chief for 4 more years. He's what is best for our country.
So, aside from another term, what is at stake for the president and the Republican Party leading into November, and what does that mean for the voters of Massachusetts? We'd like to get your reactions. Are you a Trump supporter, and are you watching the RNC this week? What do you think? Is it an effective set of messages to you? Are you on the fence? Is it an effective set of messages to you? And whether you're a supporter or not, are you finding it makes sense for you to concentrate on politics right now, or is it hard to focus on something like a national convention? 800-423-8255, that's 1-800-423-TALK, or tweet us at Radio Boston. So joining us to talk about everything that's happening this week is conservative political analyst Jennifer Braceras. Welcome back to the show, Jennifer.
Hi, Tiziana. Nice to be here.
I appreciate you joining us. So, Jennifer, we all knew that both conventions, DNC and RNC, would be not conventional, right? Had to be different. And the RNC tried to be a little less so, considering that does have some in-person elements to it, although very much scaled down from a traditional convention. So with that in mind, and 3 days in now, how do you think it's going?
Well, I don't think that either convention went or can go as well as it would if they were in-person events. We didn't see Biden get the post-convention bounce that candidates usually get. And I think part of that is because these conventions are somewhat virtual and because, you know, as you mentioned in your opening, people are sort of focused on other things right now. It's a time, I think, where even people who love politics might not be tuning in for all of the obvious reasons.
Do you think that the president will also not get the traditional bounce from the RNC this week then too, Jennifer?
I don't know. We'll see. I don't think so. I certainly don't think I'll get as much of a bounce, but time will tell.
And what do you see as the party's main agenda as we head into the November election? What are they laying out this week as the case?
Well, I think it's interesting because they really have been focusing on 3 themes, as I see it, patriotism, capitalism, and the rule of law. And those are very traditional Republican themes. And they're themes that really appeal to conservatives and even moderates who don't like Donald Trump at all, right? To people who have problems with Donald Trump's character or his ethics find themselves sort of, I think, being brought back into the fold when they hear those messages. And I talked to one voter actually who is conservative leaning, but hadn't made up her mind because she dislikes Donald Trump so much. And after watching some of the speeches from Nikki Haley and Tim Scott and others, says she's convinced.
Let me just invite listeners into this conversation again, too. Are you convinced? Are you a voter who's been on the fence and trying to figure out which direction you should go? Or if you are a longtime President Trump supporter, are you getting the messaging you expected and wanted from the Republican National Convention this year? I'm going to go to a call, 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Matt on the line from Weymouth. Matt, you're on with me and Jennifer Braceras. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks so much for having me. I got a concern, you know. So just a quick background, I was raised conservative. I grew up, you know, in a household that was conservative, but we didn't love guns. However, after watching the RNC last night, you know, I have a hard time figuring out what side of the fence I'm on. For instance, you know, I do have ties to the cannabis industry. So after listening to the fact that, you know, if we go into another shutdown, you know, we're going to let cannabis dispensaries stay open, as well as, you know, just all around listening to how they were talking about, you know, trans rights. You know, I'm somebody who has a lot of empathy and respect for people. So I just find myself more and more torn, you know, the further these debates go on and conventions go on.
Thanks for bringing your voice into this, Matt. Jennifer.
Well, I think it's interesting. I mean, Matt mentions lockdowns. I think the Republicans are trying very hard to portray the Democratic Party as the party of shutdowns. And they're the party of, you know, they, the Republicans, want to portray themselves as the party of reopening and getting America back on track. And I do think that will resonate with a lot of people who have been very frustrated with the slow pace of the reopening.
I want to talk about some of the rhetoric, Jennifer. We heard a lot of critics of last week's Democratic National Convention, or even pundits supporting it, talking about some dark themes that were brought forward. And there have been some dark themes brought forward this week, too. One of the recurring lines of rhetoric has been the president as they said in one of the opening speeches, the bodyguard of Western civilization. And I want to play Kimberly Guilfoyle here, a Trump campaign senior advisor and now Donald Trump Jr.'s girlfriend, talking about how Democrats are seen as a threat to Western civilization.
They want to destroy this country and everything that we have fought for and hold dear. They want to steal your liberty, your freedom. They want to control what you see and think and believe so that they can control how you live. They want to enslave you to the weak, dependent, liberal, victim ideology to the point that you will not recognize this country or yourself.
You know, those are very strong words. And,
yeah.
And this idea of bodyguarding Western civilization, what is the argument about what needs to be bodyguarded?
Well, let me just start by saying, as somebody wrote in the National Review earlier today, that, you know, if Kimberly Guilfoyle had been a character on the West Wing, the producer of that show would have been rightfully raked over the coals for creating a caricature and a cartoon-like portrayal of conservative women. I mean, that speech was just ridiculous. I don't care if you're for Donald Trump or you're a conservative. I thought that speech was somewhat embarrassing, and certainly, you know, doesn't speak for me or a lot of the Republicans I know. It had a very Evita Peron quality to it, sort of the way she was screaming and, you know, looking beautiful and coiffed, but, you know, screaming to fire up the masses. I didn't care for it at all. So I don't know that I'm sure she certainly was effective to some segment of the base that sort of share her approach. I think, you know, she certainly didn't influence any moderates or people who are on the fence, but I don't know that she deterred them either if they went on to watch other speakers.
I'm going to go to another call in a minute, but before I do, I want to follow up on that and say, so who this week has best spoken for and to you?
Well, I mean, I'm not just speaking, you know, for myself. I'm speaking
for,
I think, a lot of voters that I've spoken to over the past few weeks. And I tend to speak to a lot of never Trump conservatives, right? I tend to speak to a lot of right-leaning moderates. And these people were all very impressed, as was I, with Senator Tim Scott, you know, with former Ambassador Nikki Haley, Daniel Cameron, the young attorney general from Kentucky, only 34 years old, I thought was extremely impressive and well-spoken. The Trump family members, the Kimberly Guilfoyles, those people are to play, they're for the base. They're not going to convince people who might be Trump skeptical. But many of the other speakers, I think, were quite effective in convincing Trump skeptics.
I want to go to the phones here, 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Mike on the line from Somerville. Mike, go ahead.
Hi, I just think that the era of globalization is kind of it's over, basically, with mass immigration and trade. And I think that Trump actually came out as kind of a moderate figure, saying, let's take a breather, let's step back a little bit from that. There's been a lot of harm done with that globalization mentality. And I think he did a good job of being inclusive with that message and having lots of speakers, people of color, and kind of saying, actually, this is about just taking a step back, just taking a breather. And so I thought that the convention was very good with the way it was structured.
Thanks for that call, Mike. And I want to pick up, Jennifer, on both Mike's note about inclusivity there and your note about the Attorney General from Kentucky. That one in particular, I think, underscores some of the fault lines between what we heard in the DNC last week and at the RNC this week, because, of course, that's also the Attorney General who critics would charge has not chosen to arrest police officers who were involved in the killing of Breonna Taylor. How do we deal with those fault lines in these 70 days or so before the November election? Is there a way for America to come together? Or are those fault lines so deep that we're just going to be separated?
Well, I think there are very deep fault lines on public policy, and I think it's sort of in worldview. But, you know, as Attorney General Cameron noted, and, you know, he's a young African-American man, you know, not all Blacks think alike. And he took on Vice President Biden for making not just one, but three or four comments suggesting that African-Americans are a monolithic voting group over his career. And I think that the way we come together is to recognize our diversity and our diversity of thought, and to recognize that we won't always agree, that there will often be very deep policy differences, but that doesn't make us, you know, traitors to our race. It doesn't make us racist. It just means we have to find areas of common ground, and we can only do that when we respect where the other side is coming from and not accuse them of bad motives. So I thought Daniel Cameron was very effective in speaking to that point.
So, you know, let's stay with that for a second. 8% of Black Americans voted for President Trump in the 2016 elections. Mm-hmm. And there are many in the Black community who have accused him very overtly of being racist, that there may be policies that have not been, but that the president is. Is there anything that has happened in the Republican National Convention this week that might sway Black voters? Do you think there's any chance in 2020 that a higher percentage go for Trump than did in 2016?
Well, I have to be honest with you, before the killing of George Floyd and you know, all of the protests and reaction we've seen since then, I actually thought that President Trump was on track to receive a larger share of the Black vote than any Republican in my lifetime. And part of that is because of his efforts on criminal justice reform that no other president of either party had taken on. And also just from the things that I've been hearing when I talk with Black voters, again, many of whom voted for President Obama, but seem to like this president. And, you know, I should say, I'm actually not somebody who really likes this president. I think you know that, Tiziana. I'm not a fan of his character. I didn't vote for him in 2016. So, you know, I'm very Trump skeptical, but I did see movement amongst Black voters towards President Trump after the criminal justice reform took place. I don't know, you know, I haven't really spoken to a lot of those people recently. I don't know how it's going to tip. I still think he'll get more than the 8% he got last time. I don't know that it'll be as high as I had originally predicted.
So, Jennifer, I'm going to ask you to sit tight because I want to bring another voice into the conversation. We have Janet Fogarty, who's a delegate to the RNC this year and a national and state committee woman from Massachusetts in the state GOP. She's also the regional chair for Southeastern Massachusetts and the Cape and the Islands for the Trump-Pence campaign. Welcome to Radio Boston, Janet.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So you were at the convention in Charlotte. What was that like?
Well, it was great. It was very well organized. And, you know, of course, we were very COVID compliant. It was certainly different than 2016 and 2012. I was delegate for those conventions as well. Obviously, extremely scaled back, only about 300 delegates, six or seven from each state were able to attend. So of our 41, only six were able to be there. But it was, you know, it got the business of what it's all about done. So, and, you know, we did what we were there to do, and it was a success.
For you, Janet, what are the key agenda items that you want to see from the president and that you needed to hear this week?
He's everything that has been the speakers that have been on, you know, for the first night and the second night, and everyone has pretty much laid out what I think that the agenda of the convention is. The land of promise, there's a theme. It's land of promise, land of opportunity, land of heroes, and land of greatness. So each night, the speakers that are selected are threading all of those themes together. And I think that so far I've seen what I've seen, it's working.
Janet, I know you know there are critics who would say that the opportunity and promise you're talking about haven't been available to some marginalized groups in the country. How does the party address that argument?
Well, I think that, as Jennifer mentioned, this president has been the president that has been able to increase the Black Americans' job employment ratios pre-COVID, and even since COVID, as we start to reopen the country, the unemployment figures are gradually going down. But for Latinos and Black Americans, this president has been able to boost their economic standpoint in our society. Mm-hmm. So I think that it has been a success.
Janet, I will pick back up on the Just very quickly, for those who are on the fence or turned off by the president's rhetoric, what would you say to them?
Well, I would say that just look at what he has done, what he has promises made, promises kept. He is someone who is not a politician by background, as we know, and there has been, some missteps in along the way, being not a polished politician, but he has made promises and he's kept those promises. And you don't really find that in many politicians. And I think that if you look at what he has done and what he intends to do over the next 4 years, it's aggressive, but he will get it done. He will continue on with in the past 4 years, and he'll compound upon that in the next four.
That's Janet Fogarty, 2020 RNC delegate. Janet, I appreciate you taking the time today. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So Jennifer, I want to turn back to you for just a minute. I do want to pick up on the question of the coronavirus and COVID-19.
Yeah.
Because it is of note that the convention has not addressed the amount of loss of life, the disproportionate impact that the virus has had on people of color and low-income people in the country, and hasn't explored whether the country and the president and the administration did anything wrong. And I wonder, of course, you want to put your best foot forward in a convention, but any concerns with that?
Well, I think it's just what you said. It's conventions are about putting your best foot forward and inspiring optimism and hope. And you did see the First Lady mention it last night, which I thought was important. But I also think, there's not a person out there who doesn't know that we've been dealing with the coronavirus pandemic for, 6 months, who doesn't know how serious it is, who hasn't been touched by it or lost a loved one or had someone get sick. Most people are really looking for hope for the future. They don't want to hear negativity. And so I think it's smart politics, frankly, not to dwell on what we couldn't control, frankly, but to talk more about how we're going to rebuild, how we're going to reopen, hope for a vaccine, hope for treatments. I think that's what people want to hear.
Now, there are going to be listeners saying, wait, there are things we could have controlled here.
Well, what do you think we could have controlled? I mean, this is a virus. It doesn't, a virus is not political. A virus doesn't know borders. Yes, of course, there are things we could have controlled. We could have protected our elderly population better in our nursing homes. We could have protected the most vulnerable better. We could have not shut down the schools and frankly cost children months of academic progress. And, you know, you talk about how this disease has had disproportionate impact on poor communities and communities of color. And that's true. But so has the lockdown, and particularly the closure of schools has negatively impacted communities of color in ways that they might not be able to make up, that those particular students may not be able to make up. And that's very tragic. So, you know, I think the Republicans are talking a lot about reopening schools, about making sure that the poorest communities are served, because the rich kids are just sending their kids to private school, the rich people. So the shutdown hasn't hurt them.
I got to stop you there, Jennifer. There's so much more we could debate there, but I'm so grateful you came on. Conservative political analyst Jennifer Braceras, thanks for joining us.
No problem. Talk to you soon.